we're getting another take on the Environmental Protection Agency's new carbon emissions standards. On Friday, we spoke to a supporter of the stricter standards, which came as an executive order from President Obama bypassing Congress.
Now we're speaking to a guest who's worried about the new carbon limits for power plants, mainly coal and natural gas. William Yateman joins us now, policy analyst at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. William, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So we heard this announcement that the EPA is going to pursue these limits. This affects new coal power plants and natural gas plants. A lot of the focus has been on coal. What worries you about what the EPA is working on?
Well, two things worry me. First and foremost is the achievability of this standard. It's highly debatable, and it will be adjudicated by the courts, the extent to which the EPA's requirement for new coal-fired power plants can be met. And there are many in the industry who say it is not achievable, and therefore that it effectively bans coal-fired power plants or new coal-fired power plants in the United States. And that's a pretty big deal. I'll note from a kind of an institutional power perspective, as you mentioned at the outset, there's no such congressional mandate for the president to do so, to use sort of his executive powers, the powers of the state, to sort of strike down an entire industry, one that provides 40% of our nation's electricity. And I'll note something else, and this is an analysis that I performed just today, and I beg your listeners to please check it out at a website I run called globalwarming.org. It's that, ironically, this rule, which the purpose of which is to decrease greenhouse gas emissions, very well may end up increasing greenhouse gas emissions. And I'll explain this very briefly. The technology that the EPA mandated, carbon capture and sequestration, EPA projects will be viable in the medium, for the foreseeable future, only when paired with an oil recovery process, an oil production process known as enhanced oil recovery. What the EPA envisions is that carbon will be captured at coal plants, then sold to oil companies who will inject that carbon dioxide under the ground in order to enhance oil production. Well, I performed an analysis of the GHG emissions that can be expected from the combustion of the oil produced by these GHG emissions that have been stored from the coal plant, and for the average coal-fired power plant, for all coal-fired power plants, all CO2 injected, it results in an increase of emissions. So for every kilogram of CO2 captured from a coal plant, you get 1.6 kilograms of GHGs emitted from the combustion of the oil that captured CO2 engendered. So that's a pretty darn big deal, and it's something that EPA didn't address in the rule. I suspect if it does, it's going to have a very difficult time explaining that away. I mean, the rule would be plainly illegal.
But presumably,
indeed bears out.
Presumably, we'd be getting some of that oil out anyway without this injection process, so we're still, you know, taking out some of the carbon from the coal plants and maybe getting a little more oil? I mean, wouldn't we be getting that oil somewhere anyway?
Well, no. I mean, legally speaking, and really common sense speaking, it's what matters is sort of the emissions impact of the technology itself imposed by EPA. And what we've got here is a very simple relationship. I mean, for every part of CO2 taken from one plant, you're getting enough oil to produce, or an equivalent amount of oil that produces 1.6 kilograms of emissions. So it's not whether or not that oil would have come out anyway. And indeed, CO2 is instrumental to this extraction process. It's that the direct impact of capturing and storing this CO2 from the coal plants is a net increase in CO2. When you kind of take a life cycle emissions account of the process. And again, that's something that legally the agency will be required to account for, and it didn't do so in the proposed rule, and it could end up with egg all over its face for having proposed a rule that does the opposite of what it intended.
Well, let's get to the concept of capturing that carbon from coal plants in the first place. You say the technology is not there yet. The coal industry certainly has been saying it's not there. The EPA says, hey, we have at least the starting points here. We've got some things that have been tested around the country and are successful. These new rules are going to spur innovation, and we're not that far from being there. Do you buy that?
Well, I mean, legally speaking, it's not whether or not I buy it. It's I guess, a matter of what the law says. And the law says the technology, carbon capture and sequestration, must be adequately demonstrated and achievable in all parts of the country. And that's a high hurdle. You'd mentioned some test plants. The fact is those aren't online yet. EPA only cites progress in the construction of those plants in the justification of its standard. And I strongly suspect, in my legal opinion, that that's not going to cut it. That merely asserting that it's possible without actually demonstrating that it's possible isn't sufficient. So we'll find out. But you know, the evidence, certainly given past experience and past regulations of these sorts, doesn't bode well for the EPA, in my opinion.
If this does clear court muster and does go into effect, but the coal companies are right and they really can't meet these standards, what do you see as a result for new power plant construction and for the economy in general in the long run?
Well, I mean, it's sort of, again, coal provides 40% of our electricity for a simple reason. It's the cheapest fuel out there. And what I fear, I guess, in the long term is whereas I'm a champion of the technological revolution that has ushered in a new era in the natural gas market in the United States, and I'm sure your listeners are acquainted with something called fracking, people forget that only, you know, what was it, 5 years ago? It was 2008 when natural gas was selling it at $13 per million BTUs. Today it's near three. Again, that's thanks to fracking and also depressed demand due to economic recession. But such a price spike. I mean, if we move wholesale as a country, our electricity production, away from coal, away from nuclear, and too kind of overly reliant, I'd argue, on natural gas, which, again, I'm a champion of that fuel, but it's sort of dangerous to have a lack of fuel diversity given the historical volatility in the price of natural gas. So my fear would be that 10 years down the road, because we've effectively banned new coal-fired power plants, all we're going to get is gas plants, and that were we to experience a price spike of the sort we saw only 5 years ago, that it could cause some real problems.
I mentioned that we had a supporter of these new regulations on last Friday when they first came out. She said, you know, when we had mercury emission standards for coal plants and we had other aspects of the Clean Air Act coming into effect, we heard the same arguments from the coal industry, from their supporters, and we got through and everything worked out okay. Do you think that that there are lessons we can learn from past regulations that worked out that we could apply and make these regulations work?
Well, I'll note that she was probably premature in her analysis of the mercury standard. That was promulgated only in February of 2012. And I'll note just real briefly about that rule. It would cost, by EPA's own admission, $10 billion a year. That's one of the most expensive regulations ever. Its avowed purpose, according to the agency, is to protect a supposed population of pregnant subsistence fisherwomen who consume more than 200 pounds of fish, self-caught fish, from exclusively the 10% most polluted bodies of water during their pregnancies. EPA never identified a single member of the supposed population. Rather, they were modeled to exist. So that's a silly, expensive rule that really lends credence to some of the rhetoric you hear out there about this administration waging a war on coal and imposing politically motivated regulations against an industry that's politically unpopular with a segment of the president's base.
The regulations we're talking about on carbon emissions, the ones announced last Friday, apply to new construction. The EPA says it's working on changing rules for existing plants. What do you expect to see from that?
We'll see. I mean, the EPA has not tipped its hand one way or another. I mean, I guess earlier indications are that states that have already enacted significant climate policies. For example, there's the regional greenhouse gas initiative, sort of a small cap and trade, a regional cap and trade in the Northeast. There's also, I think, 30 states have enacted these Soviet-style green energy production quotas known as renewable energy standards. So EPA has intimated that for existing power plants, state participation in these regulatory regimes for climate change, you know, that they're currently participating in, perhaps would suffice. But we don't really know. That there's a very limited record of EPA using that particular provision, Section 111D of the Clean Air Act. So there's not much history to go on, and EPA's been pretty tight-lipped about it. So it's anywhere from as lenient as allowing states to continue what they're doing or to afford them that discretion, to as strong as there are people out there who say Section 111D authorizes EPA to impose a cap and trade. Only time will tell. I mean, for the foreseeable future, I've got this current rule, this carbon pollution standard, the one we've been talking about, on my plate. And it effectively bans coal-fired power, or arguably, can ban coal-fired power plants, and again, seems to increase GHG emissions. So that's the current fight.
William, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's William Yateman, policy analyst at the Competitive Enterprise Institute.